You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
On the night of January 16th, 2009, seven people entered an arms factory in Brighton, England. Inside, they smashed up the factory to the tune of some $300,000. They called themselves decommissioners because they aimed to disrupt the arms factory production. After the smash-up, they then waited for the police to come to the factory and arrest them. This action took place as Israel was bombing Gaza, killing some 1,400 people, including over 300 children. The British factory that was decommissioned was producing military equipment used in the release mechanism for bombing by Israeli military aircraft. The seven decommissioners came to trial this year, and at the end of last month, June, the jury reached its decision. They acquitted all seven. On the line from England is Chris Osmond. He is one of the decommissioners. Greetings, Chris, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio, and most of all, congratulations on the victory in the court.
Hi there. Thanks very much.
You and others were protesting at the EDO arms factory long before the night people entered to decommission its operations. Can you tell us a little bit about that kind of work and why you undertook those protests?
So the campaign against EDO MBM in Brighton really came out of the anti-war movement which happened in 2002, 2003 in the UK, the widespread grassroots opposition to the invasion of Iraq. And around that time, around 2003, campaigners came across this factory in our town, which was making the Paveway system of guided bombs, which were the most used guided bomb in the bombardment of Iraq. And people decided that they weren't willing to put up with people making money out of the war in our town, and started a campaign to close the factory. It was also it came out really of a frustration with the ineffectiveness of the mainstream anti-war movement in the UK. Millions of people had marched in the capital in 2003, and yet the government didn't feel that it had to listen to the people who were marching, and many people, including the people who started the Smash EDO campaign, the campaign against EDO, thought that the movement would have been much more successful if we'd incorporated a full toolbox of tactics in our movement, including direct action, and if we'd targeted the people who were standing to profit from Britain's illegal war, and the people who were the spear carriers for our government and other governments repressing people in Iraq and Palestine. And since 2004, the campaign was launched with an occupation of the roof of the factory and a blockade of the road, which shut the factory down for a day. And since then, there have been demonstrations at least every week outside the factory, which is on an industrial estate on the outskirts of Brighton. And it's really been a relentless campaign against the factory by a coalition of people, including people opposed to the war, Palestine Solidarity activists, pacifists, Quakers, students, academics, etc. And one of the aspects of the campaign really is has been the opposition to the manufacture of components which go to the Israeli states. EDO have always denied manufacturing any components for Israel at their factory in Brighton. However, over the years, campaigners had become more and more convinced that they were in fact lying, and that they were manufacturing components, namely the Zero Retention Force Arming Unit, which is a release mechanism for the Israeli F-16, trigger mechanism for the Israeli F-16 at the Brighton factory. During the Israeli attacks on Lebanon in 2006, campaigners occupied the roof of the factory and alluded to the massacre that had taken place in Qana. They hung a banner saying 16 children dead in Qana, Lebanon, Edo profits from murder. However, and despite calls from local councillors and many different people in the community, the factory has never been scrutinised in terms of its supplies to Israel, and has never been held accountable to the community. And when Operation Cast Lead came around, which was the most intense attack, really. And I think it could probably be said to be the most intense Israeli attack on the Palestinians since 1948. And that attack really was completely unimaginable. The intense bombardment of a civilian community in the Gaza Strip for over 3 weeks, using aerial bombardment, attacks with white phosphorus on civilian objects, and the entrances and exits to the Gaza Strip were closed, so the civilian population was trapped and was able really to find no safe place. People whose homes had been bombed in the first weeks of the bombardment took refuge in the city centres and sought aid from the United Nations, sought refuge in schools and UN compounds, and those UN compounds and schools were targeted by the Israeli military. One of the motivations for our action was the targeting of the UN compound in Gaza City on the 15th of January, which happened after the Israelis had dropped leaflets asking Palestinians to leave their homes and to seek refuge and take aid from the United Nations. And there was a deliberate attack with white phosphorus and with missiles on the United Nations compound. It was a miracle that there weren't huge civilian casualties, because 700 or more civilians were sheltering in the compound that day. But tons of United Nations aid, which was desperately needed by the civilian population in Gaza, went up in flames. And that was really one of the biggest motivations for taking our action.
Now, you stayed in the factory after the smash-up, and the police came, and you voluntarily surrendered yourself. You then came to a trial, and what argument did you put forward at the trial, given that you acknowledged you had done the destruction of their arms process, manufacturing process?
Well, I should say, first of all, that six people entered the factory and decommissioned it, damaging computers, the server, machinery used for making weapons. Two people, myself and one other, were arrested for supporting the action. But the defence that we all put forward was that we had lawful excuse to damage the property of the factory, that we were acting to save lives and protect property, and we were acting to prevent Edo's equipment from being used by the Israeli defense forces in war crimes in Gaza, and to prevent the crime of Edo's complicity in war crimes, which we also said was a crime which was going on in Brighton.
And what do you think convinced the jury that was as you contended, justified action? What do you think were the telling things in the trial that resulted in their agreement with your argument, the jury's agreement with your argument?
Well, the prosecution put forward a really a quite laughable argument that Edo MBMITT was an in-flight entertainment system factory which didn't really make many military products at all. And they even were selective about the information that they gave to the jury. They gave the jury a bundle of photographs of the damage to the factory, but they admitted that they didn't include pictures of missiles which were found inside the factory. So they were particularly dishonest in the way they portrayed what Edo were doing to the factory. And I guess that there were two things really that I think would have changed the jury's mind. The first thing was the evidence given by the managing director of the factory, Paul Hills, who was the prosecution's witness. He was presented with a bundle of evidence about his factory's links with Israel on the witness stand. He was on the witness stand for around 5.5 days. And I think that by the end of that cross-examination, during which time the judge warned him that he should be careful not to not to perjure himself and not to admit to committing offences, otherwise he could find himself being charged with criminal offences. I think during that cross-examination, it became very clear that Edo were not being honest with the public, and even in the judge's summing up, actually, the judge painted him as a less than credible witness. He was presented with documents about his factory's supply to Israel, and wasn't able to give answers which were credible to the jury. So I think that's the first place where the case was turned around. The second really was transporting the jury to Palestine, giving them a picture of what had been happening in Palestine, not just in Operation Cast Lead, but also since 1948. We presented expert evidence about the history of the occupation of Palestine. We also presented the jury with video evidence about the attacks which had happened in Cast Lead, including the attack on the UN compound, and with sound clips of Palestinians and international volunteers calling for support from the international community. That was a theme of the trial. The endless calls for some sort of help from the Palestinian people. I think that after the month-long trial, the jury would have been under no would have had a good impression of what had been going on in Palestine and in the assault on Gaza. Some of us who gave evidence, some of the defendants who gave evidence, had been volunteers with the International Solidarity Movement in Palestine, and we spoke about our experiences. And our final witness was a woman called Sharon Locke, who was a volunteer with the Free Gaza Movement, who was a witness to the Israeli attack on Al-Quds Hospital, again on the 15th of January. And she gave evidence about that aerial attack on the hospital, about the evacuation of patients in their beds from the hospital under Israeli sniper fire. And she ended her evidence, actually, but she was asked what was her opinion of companies which manufacture weapons for Israel. And she said that she thought that their hands were awash with the blood of the patients who'd been injured leaving Al-Quds Hospital that night. And I think after hearing all of that, members of the jury who knew nothing about we don't know how much they knew about Palestine before the case would have no misconceptions about what had been going on. They're also presented with the findings of the Goldstone report. There was a a shortened version of the Goldstone report read out to the jury, which was the UN inquiry into war crimes in Gaza. So I think those were the two steps. Edo taking the stand and proving that they were liars, and secondly, giving the jury a taste of what it must have been like to be in Gaza.
Well, thank you very
much. Population being bombed.
Thank you very much, Chris, for explaining that, and it's really been enlightening to hear of your direct action and also of the process by which the jury came to see its justice. Thanks again.
Okay.
I've been speaking with Chris Osmond. He's one of a group of activists who decommissioned an arms factory in Brighton, England, that was producing bomb release mechanisms for the Israeli military. All seven of the activists were acquitted by the jury, who agreed their actions were justified.